Certainly good to see all of you tonight. I encourage you to grab your Bible, turn it over to Joshua chapter 2. Joshua chapter 2. And we'll find the text that we're going to use in our discussion in that text in just a little bit. I want you to go to Joshua 2, but I want you to take that fancy ribbon thing they put in all the Bibles right there and stick it right there in Joshua chapter 2, because I'm going to come back to it. I'm actually going to start in the New Testament here in just a moment. But I want to talk a little bit tonight about some lessons that we can gain from Rahab. I've found as when you spend a lot of time in the same locations, and I spent 14 years in Moundsville, I'm about to finish the fourth year I've been in Payton City, that sometimes you got to be willing to reinvent yourself a little bit from a preaching standpoint, because people get kind of used to the same thing all the time when you hear you preach. Now, Lewis made the obligatory compliment about the sermons this morning. One fellow walked out of the building and said, "Of all the hundreds of sermons I've heard you preach, that was one of them." That's all he could give me. That's all he had. And so we understand sometimes that's just the way it works, right? And so one of the things I've tried to do in the past couple of years is just go to a text and let the text preach itself. And so here tonight, I think that's what we'll try to do. I want to go into Joshua chapter 2 here in just a moment. I want to look at the life of Rahab, and I want us to notice some things about her that I think we can make some parallels with, and some things that I think we can benefit in relationship to who she was and what she brought to the cause of God and the purposes that he had in mind. Let me remind you a little bit, not to insult your biblical intelligence, but let's just refresh each other in relationship to the things that we know about this Bible character. Rahab was living in a place called Jericho. If you recall, when the people of God eventually will go in and take over the promised land, Jericho is the place they will start. You recall they've got to cross the Jordan, and he kind of gets them across that just the same way he got them through the Red Sea, in similar fashion anyway. And eventually they come to Jericho, and God's got a pretty unusual plan in mind in order for them to be able to take down the walls of Jericho. In fact, they wouldn't have to take them down at all. God would do that and be able to conquest the land starting here with Jericho. And that's where Rahab lived in relationship to the plans of God. She eventually ends up in the lineage that ultimately will result in Jesus coming in earthly form. And she's mentioned, in fact, she's only one, I think it's two, I'm ahead of my charts a little bit here, but she's one of four mentioned in Matthew's account of the lineage of Jesus. She's stated as being the mother of Boaz, the husband of Ruth. You remember that Bible account as well, do you not? And so she's referenced as that, and if my math is correct, I think that would make her the great-great-grandmother then of King David, if you're backing that up. Now, I realize lineages are hard, because sometimes they would say somebody is a father when maybe they were actually the grandfather. They were part of the family heritage, and so the math can get a little bit difficult sometimes, but roughly, she's the great-great-grandmother of David. She's an integral part of the reason why Jesus in earthly form, I know it's God's plan, but in earthly form that he becomes part of human history. One of the four women, as we mentioned earlier, as being part of the lineage that Matthew mentions. Now you say, well, that's not all that significant. That's extremely significant, because women generally weren't mentioned in the lineage of the heritage. Generally, and I'm not trying to insult any of the ladies here, if I was going to write the history, I would include you every step of the way. But they didn't when they wrote history, okay? In their time, they wrote the history based on the men. And so the fact that any lineage, any level of lineage was noticed that a woman was involved in it is significant, that she rose to such a prominence in that history that as historians and through inspiration, God determined to include them as he records the lineage that ultimately would bring Jesus into existence here on earth. I want you to notice a couple of New Testament passages, though, with me. I want you to notice something that the Hebrew writer and the writer James says concerning her in a couple of passages. Go back, and I said we'll start the New Testament. Go back to Hebrews chapter 11 for a moment. We're just trying to paint the picture. Again, reminding ourselves of this great person of faith, this great Bible example in Rahab. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31, I want you to note that he said, "By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace." In this great cloud of witnesses, all of these great biblical people of faith that Hebrews 11 talks about, he includes Rahab of Jericho, who hid the spies, which we'll see in a little bit. And I want you to notice something I have found kind of interesting, and that is it seems that each time the Bible reminds us of her, it also reminds us of an ugly part of her past. And I've always found that in some ways to be kind of striking. That for whatever reason, as the record was being made, and as God is inspiring these men to record these things for us, there is this continual reminder of who she had been. And we look at that also then in who she had become. And what I appreciate about that is simply this: anybody can become a person of faith. It doesn't matter what you have done, what you have said, who you've hurt. It doesn't matter what you have done in your past. No one is exempt from becoming a person of faith. And he glaringly, in inspiration, glaringly reminds us of that by putting Rahab. I don't know about you, but if I were writing the Bible, if I were writing the history from my own perspective, I think I would, if I was editing, I would scratch the name harlot every time it came up. I would think that I would want to kind of dress up the narrative a little bit. I wouldn't want people thinking in those lines in relationship to any great Bible character that I'm trying to emphasize. But God never does that. God never shields truth and honesty and reality about what was really going on. Here is a great woman of faith who had a horrible past. Here's a great woman of faith who becomes part of the lineage of Jesus. She becomes a great example that different writers in the New Testament even refer to. And we also acknowledge that her faith was not a momentary thing or just something that happened, but it was an active faith. In James chapter 2 and verse 25, again, notice, likewise, James writes, was also the harlot, Rahab the harlot, also justified by works, when she received the messengers and sent them out another way. Was she not justified by works? Justified by faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Justified by works in James chapter 2. What's that tell us? That faith and works do